It's time for Twig this week in Google. Of course, lots of big Google announcements, and we've got the experts to talk about it. Kevin Toefel will talk about the new Chromebook Slate, Stacey Higginbotham about the new Google Home Hub, and Jeff Jarvis is in studio. He's got to decide, Pixel 3, no Pixel 3. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 477, recorded Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. Roadie-matic. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest from Google and the Googleverse. Lo and behold, he has appeared in person, in the flesh. Could he do that? Could he poke me if he weren't here? Stacey, he's going to be your
automaton.
Puncher by proxy.
Excellent. Jeff, I need a proxy puncher.
Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism. We'll find out why he's here in just a bit. Also, Stacey Higginbotham. But Stacey's at the airport.
So, yes, sorry for the glow and the weird sounds.
You sound great. Which airport are you at and why?
I'm at SeaTac. This week was at something called the Smart Kitchen Summit.
Are you also house hunting?
I was not house hunting yet. No, I was just at the Smart Kitchen Summit doing robots in the kitchen, screens in the kitchen, so many things in the kitchen.
I bought something in the kitchen I want to show you. I thought, finally, I'll have something Stacey doesn't have. But I don't have it yet. But I'll show it to you.
What is it?
I'll tell you in a second. But first, let's introduce Kevin Toefel.
Yay!
He is also here, Stacey's co-host on the IoT podcast, but also the maitre d' at aboutchromebooks.com.
I'm everything at aboutchromebooks.com. I'm the maitre d', the waiter, the busboy, you name it.
Chief cook and bottle washer, we used to say.
That's me.
We, of course, it's great to have Kevin here because he was at the Google event. You weren't there,
I was not. I was jealous as hell. Yeah. If I were in New York, I would have been there, but I wasn't. I was here.
Why are you here? Hold on.
Yeah, we didn't ask yet. Why are you here?
I'm not allowed to say. Watch next week. I'll make some announcements on stuff, but I'm working on things.
Okay. I don't know.
But it's not a huge deal. It's just work.
It's work. It's his job. And he does it well. So Google had an event. I thought, given all the leaks, that there would be nothing to say, and there wasn't.
There wasn't, right? I love the way they started it. They just went ahead and admitted it.
They played a video of...
Don't we have the video?
YouTube, yeah. No, not that one.
They are finally
not that one. Let me get you the video. I have it in my Twitter. Not that video.
Yeah, this is why they were asking YouTubers for any video content. They,
Did they ask for it? There's IS Akhtar.
Yeah, we had a pretty good idea they were going to do this.
Excel. We have a very clear image now of this Pixel 3.
You know pretty much everything about it.
No matter how hard you try, you literally can't get anything past the internet.
So, and then they tweeted, tune in tomorrow, see for yourself. And I thought that meant, because there was a theory that they were punking everybody. Right. I thought that meant, this is hysterical. None of it's true. No, it was all the same. There was nothing.
They were poking fun at themselves, and it went over pretty well, I thought, they got a good laugh out of it.
The only thing that you could say that was differing from all the leaks was there were no new Pixel Buds. There was no Pixel Book 2.
No watch, though. We knew that.
No, we knew there would be no watch. They had already said that. So there were some things that maybe they were going to announce. They didn't. But basically, they announced the Pixel 3, Pixel 3 XL. They announced the Pixel Book. Actually, you nailed the name. What did they call it? The Pixel Slate?
Kevin? Pixel Slate.
Yep. Kevin got that right. They announced even the wireless charging stand that we thought they would.
Right.
And a 7-inch Google Home Hub, which... is the only thing surprised me there is that it's only 7 inches. They didn't do a 7 and a 10 like other companies have done.
Oh, it's really small.
Kevin has some insights about that.
Okay. All right.
After every one of these events, back in the day, back in the good old days, we'd do a race to see who gets in the order first, right?
I ordered before the event was over.
I haven't ordered.
I ordered the Pixel 3 XL. I was very impressed. But you know who has, I think, everything? Because he brought it home from the event.
Whoa.
Kevin Toefel. Did you get everything, Kevin?
No, I didn't get everything. I got a Pixel 3 XL.
Whoa. There it is. Let's see the notch. You can't even see the notch.
Well, yeah, that's because... that's because it's an iPhone. Hang on.
That has a notch too, go. By the way. There is the notch. That's not that big.
That's obnoxious. It's awful.
It's double the height. It brings the status bar almost to like double the height, and that's what people are going off about. And I get it. It's not ideal, but you know, I don't think it's terrible.
$799 for a 64 gig version. $100 more for a double the memory, 128 gig storage. Version for the XL and $100 less in each category for the smaller.
$799 or $899?
Was it $799? Oh, that's what it was. $799 for the Pixel 3, $899 for the XL.
$999 for the top.
Yeah, I end up spending $999
because
I got double.
I am not going to buy, you know, I've been a Pixel or a Google hardware person forever. That's too much money. And I would get the smaller version because, you know, tiny hands and pockets and all that nonsense. But
and there's no notch in the smaller version, right, Kevin?
Correct. It's just a small chin and forehead.
So chin and forehead?
That's what we call it. Like the old Pixel 2 XL.
Right. A top and bottom bezel.
There's a chin.
What the kids used to say.
And a forehead. No, it's a chin and a forehead.
Oh, that's new.
Which everybody wonders because the new XL has a chin. But no forehead.
Instead,
it's like my first girlfriend.
It has a lobotomy.
So, I'm sorry, Kathy. That was not a good thing to say. You had a little bit of a forehead, but she didn't have a notch. I'm pretty sure. So, why?
Stacey, I'm doing it for you now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Did you see me just open my mouth in horror there? I'm like,
oh,
stop.
No, it's a joke. It's just a joke.
Yeah, so I'm going to come in a year to Kevin and be like, yo, Kevin, give me a cheap phone. Or
yes,
give me a good recommendation for... Because with Android, what does Google call the now everyone gets Android at the same time kind of effort?
Android One.
Android One. I was going to say Android first.
Treble makes that possible.
Yeah, Treble.
Code name.
And Treble.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Stacey,
I still would get a Google phone. I don't trust anybody else with Android.
Why did you order? What impressed
you? I have a Note
9
in the other room, and I don't trust Samsung with Android.
So you said before it was over, you ordered it. What impressed you?
Well, I think the camera, and I'm sure Kevin will have something to say about that. But it's and so far I've heard from and seen from a number of people who were at the event and handled it that it's everything that last year's was not. That the screen this time is very good. Uh-huh. That the feel in the hand is very good. I like it that it has wireless charging because every other phone I use has wireless charging. That's a real convenience for me. I bought the stand just to try it because it sounded like it had special features. It somehow recognized. Actually, that's another question which is yet unanswered. Does it automatically turn on the screensaver, the Daydream, you know, photo album, and the larger clock if it's not on its Pixel stand?
Are we going to see an unboxing now?
We could do that. I haven't opened it yet, only because I have a wireless charger already.
Yeah.
And those special features either are not enabled yet on the review model, because there are a few software bits not here yet, or it's smart enough to know, hey, this isn't a Pixel stand. I'm not going to do the special stuff. But you're right that when on that stand, it kind of turns the phone into a limited mini Google Home Hub in a sense, because it can show you your photos.
Right.
It has your routine buttons for, you know, the Google Assistant, and it'll even show your Nest camera doorbell or doorbell camera rather if somebody rings the doorbell.
Yeah, so that's kind of
so neat. Kevin, would you buy it?
You know, Jeff, I'm in a different position at this point because I'm kind of like trying to budget things for the first time in my life. And I literally just bought 2 months ago a $325 Nokia 7 Plus, which lasts for 2 days. It's speedy enough for me. The camera's decent enough. So given that, I'd probably say no. If I had the money to burn, yeah, I probably would, just because the camera features alone have blown me away in the past just 24 hours.
This does highlight Google's problem, though. If people have enough money, they'll probably buy an iPhone, because people who buy Android phones tend to be budget consumers.
And I don't know about that.
I think so. I think that's the real problem. And if they're not budget consumers, they're probably buying Samsung. We know that Google only sold 10 million Pixel 2s in a year.
Go on, Kevin.
Well, Leah, I think you're partly right and partly wrong. And I say that because the difference is there really isn't many cheap iPhone options unless you want something that's 2 or 3 years old, right? So if you're going to have iOS, you've got to pay, you know, X amount of dollars.
If you've got a lot of money, you're going to get an iPhone.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, Samsung does sell a lot of Galaxies. It does. It's not their biggest moneymaker in terms of overall volume times, profit. So that's why they have the low and mid-range phones.
That's problem number two for Google is if you've got a small, I think there's a smaller number of Android people who are willing to spend money. But those people are buying Samsungs. So problem number two, at the very best, Google's dividing the high end of the Android market with Samsung at the best.
What's their business goal? Is it to be a highly profitable item, or is it still to set the bar?
Sure looked like at watching the event, it looked like that they think they're a player. They want to be a player. Really? This is not a reference product.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They must have some, and this probably comes into their CFO, who's been there, at least 2 years now. They probably have some hard targets on that hardware division now, because things have changed ever since Ruth Porat came on. Yeah. They want to make serious money out of that hardware division.
So I have my year-old Pixel 2. Oh, by the way, before I forget, do you still get the always-on notification screen thing like this?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
I do love that. Love that a lot. So this is a year old phone. It's perfectly good. It's wonderful. Kevin, your advice to me, not that I'm rich, I'm not, but is the camera alone worth upgrading? Put it that way.
From what do you have now? What do you have now, Jeff?
The Pixel 2.
You know, I don't have one of those anymore. I have a first gen Pixel.
Here's part of the question mark, and maybe Kevin can help us with this. Google wasn't completely clear about which of the camera features are migrating to the Pixel 2 and which aren't.
Ah, right.
Both of them are using that same chip, the image engine. And it sounded like they now, in the announcement, that some of these features, if not all of these features, are going to be available at least on the Pixel 2, if not other Android phones.
Yeah, I'm not.
The night thing?
I suspect the night sight is not going to be pushed down, and that is just an opinion. I don't have hard information on that. I also believe, and I've been trying to research this afternoon, I'm kind of coming up short, if they upgraded that visual core chip in this model. I know they put the Titan security chip in here, but obviously that has nothing to do with photos. I seem to believe they have updated the visual core chip, in which case some things may not come all the way down the line.
This is a Lifehacker article on how to get some of the features, or what features, and this is the problem, is Google wasn't clear in the announcement, but which features will migrate down. No, I don't want that. Thank you. According to Google, Night Sight will be rolling out to previously released Pixel smartphones in the coming weeks.
Oh, okay.
Duplex. Duplex is getting a full release on the Pixel 3 devices and will be coming to other Pixel phones in November.
Remind us what Duplex is.
That's that assistant that talks to you. And adds us. And so this is so they announced.
Stacey, was that your imitation of a computer?
No, that was just
That was an not an.
Screening, which I think everybody in the room, Kevin, enjoyed a lot, the idea that the call screening driven by Google Assistant on phone call screening will also be on all Pixel phones.
I think they stole that.
They stole it from
themselves with Google Voice.
Ah, yes, Google Voice does that. But Google Voice, it's not quite the same, because with Google Voice, you have to have a preset in the Google Voice settings where you say, hey, if they're not on my, like, as for instance, if they're not on my contact list screen, or if they're an unknown caller screen. This one, as a call comes in, you can press a button that says screen that one. In real time, Google Voice does not do that. That is awesome.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I'm getting calls all the time from like Apple. And I'd love to just press, instead of just hang up on them, screen it or something. Playground and improved AR will launch first in the Pixel 3, but roll out to other Pixel phones soon.
All right, so I might be sticking with, I can't wait. We're not there yet. I know, and I don't want to get ahead, but what I'm most looking forward to is Kevin's view of the Pixel Book.
Okay, we'll get there.
We're going to get there. I know we're not there yet. That's my, if I'm going to spend $1,000 or more, where's it going to go?
Let's continue on with the phone. Because, Kevin, you said something that I think intrigues everybody listening. You were very excited about the camera.
Yes. So I've been playing with the camera. Again, it does not have the night sight yet. It did just get the playground feature this morning. So I was having Iron Man run around my house, a virtual AR type kind of thing. The front-facing selfie mode, portrait mode rather, in selfie, I thought is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I don't know if we can share a picture that I took, but
yes,
I took
it?
One in. It's on the rundown. I tried to share it through Google Photos. Hopefully it is
okay.
Shareable or viewable, I should say.
All right. Where did you put it in the?
It's line 20.
Line 20. Oh, self-portrait. Here it is. I've got it. Yep.
Can you see it? I'm not sure.
So one of the things Marques Brownlee did is took a picture of himself in his car, and he said, sure isn't softened like the iPhone XS. Yeah, look at that. Whoa. Look at the detail.
Wow. Stubble. We can count his stubble.
Now, we're blowing this up a lot, but actually that looks, and look at the bokeh.
Yeah, that's cool.
This looks good. Whoa. This looks really good.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm very impressed with that.
The way the iPhone's doing it is actually kind of weird. It's softening a lot of it. It's over-processing it, and a lot of people complained about that. That's really the competition, of course, is the new iPhone XS. The iPhone is now doing what Google did last time with the Pixel 2, which is taking multiple images. Did you say they don't yet have the best shot feature? Is that not there? Or
yeah, so you have to turn the motion on. There's a setting in the phone to do that, and you can turn the motion on, but it's not yet showing you which is the recommended photos, nor is it letting you choose a photo. However, that picture I just took or just showed was actually at the Google, because I went there after lunch to hang with some of my old teammates, and I did see that feature and got to use it. They're dog fooding it right now. So it's probably going to show up like any day on the Pixel 3 XL. It was very, very cool in the demo, and then I got to use it, and it worked really, really well. Like, we were being goofballs, like blinking and sticking our tongues out, and it was able still to capture a decent photo. So
this was actually my favorite moment in the event. It's worth probably showing it again. This is Google explaining why they did Top Shot. Do you hear the audio? You don't hear the audio.
Yeah, this was a great video.
Let me try again.
So there's a lot of pictures of just the wrong moment. Guys jump off the cliff, but you don't get it. Lots of people with terrible faces. She's blown out the candles, but they only get it afterwards. The tie is in the face of the bride. Guys walking through the picture. Everybody has taken these pictures where you just miss the shot. I love this. So what Google lets you do is, this is interesting, you have to have live picture turned on, is go back. It will make a recommended, based on, they said, AI, recommended Top Shot, but you could also choose from other ones.
And it doesn't store every one of those, killing your, I guess it's free storage anyway, so what does it matter?
Right.
I'm going to have to defer to Kevin because he's the only one who owns one. Mine will come a week from tomorrow. Yours too, probably, right?
I haven't ordered one.
Yes, it will.
It'll
just order it now.
You're the devil.
He's waiting to hear about the Pixel Book. Let's wait. Let's help
Jeff out. The suspense. We're.
I did not order this late, so this will be an interesting.
This will be interesting to see what we go on to. Yeah.
So you said the Top Shot is not enabled. I wonder though. You know, on the iPhone, if live photos turned on, it actually degrades the quality a little bit. The other images are not as good quality as the one you took. I'm sure Google's not doing it that way. They have enough horsepower in this thing, and especially with the image, special dedicated image chip, that they could have full quality images, I hope. But that's a problem with live photo.
I think it's a combination of, and something that Google, I think, is better at than Apple. It's a combination of like a burst mode, camera type implementation, as well as a processing software side and AI to kind of choose the best image for you. So
does it take the image? So it must start capturing the minute you go to the camera or the minute you raise the phone. Certainly it starts capturing before you press the button, because that's the problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when it starts to capture. It might be always capturing and then just saving the, right. A few seconds before and after. I have no idea.
I await the privacy police.
No, this is...
Well, it doesn't take it if your camera's not open, presumably.
Right. I think this is... even the privacy police can't be...
You just wait, Reagan.
Did you put Childish Gambino in your in with Norm? Because that would have been cute.
I didn't do that yet.
No.
Not yet.
That's the augmented reality stuff. Again, we saw that. This is not actually new. We just
Did they show? Did they offer a compelling use case yet?
For this?
For augmented reality? Serious? I'm like, I actually see it in industrial IoT and some other things, but no, I haven't seen anything for it to be on my actual phone. So I was just curious. Someone might come up with something, y'all.
How long will you be in Seattle before you stop saying y'all? Does it wear off?
Oh, no, they love it in Seattle.
Oh, is that it? Y'all. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they just think that's so cute.
It is cute.
Here's an interesting point from the Google keyword blog, product blog. It does notice where you're taking a picture and then suggest an appropriate overlay. This is like Snapchat Lite, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's doing some gardening, and it suggested that she put a little green thumb thought bubble.
So what that says, it knows the place, and it kind of knows the activity.
I expect more of this from Google, because this is the kind of thing Google Photos is already doing.
Yeah.
It's contextual, it kind of understands what it's seeing.
It's almost like bringing Google Lens and Google Assistant together into your compositions.
Right.
Right.
But again, you can't judge this stuff by demos, by blog posts. You got to get the phone.
I'm going to wait till you get it.
Yeah. Well, I won't have it next week, but I'll have it the week after.
Okay.
I won't be getting it at all.
So, Stacey, which one are you carrying now?
I have the Pixel 2.
The 2. Okay. So,
And it's fine.
I might agree. I might be there too. I might stick with that.
So, I'm good with it until I drop it or do something horrible, and then poof.
That's me.
What'd you say, Kevin? I should get the Nokia something something?
The new Nokia 7. It's kind of technically called the 7.1, but it's basically what I just bought, upgraded, slightly smaller and better screen. And unlike mine, which is an international version, it has the US band support. So that would work here, and it's $350. But I think your issue is going to be Verizon.
I don't know
if
my issue
Verizon's.
Is always Verizon.
The Pixel will be available. Mm-hmm. Pixel 3 will be available on Verizon. I want you to know. We're going to get.
Yeah, they gave us a Verizon SIM card.
Follow
with us
the light,
to test.
Stacey. Follow the light.
Or Stacey, you could spend $800 on the Heston cooking system.
Oh, did you get the Heston Q?
I did.
Leo, that's so crazy.
He says the woman who talked me into a $1,500 toaster oven.
No, this is a good product.
Looks really cool.
This is like the BuzzFeed thing, but fancier.
It includes an inductive
burner,
and then the pan has Bluetooth, can talk to the burner. Plus, it has a thermometer in it, so it automatically knows what temperature. It modifies the temperature according to a recipe. You can actually look at the app and see the recipe. So, if you wanted to, and then,
so Tasty's is $149. How much did you spend, Leo?
Tasty has one.
Yeah, Tasty has one.
They stopped making that one.
They did?
I believe so. Yes.
Do you have one?
So this is no. I haven't. I'm not a sauteer type. I don't need help there.
I don't really need help there either, frankly. This is not an area that is that complicated.
Well, so in this is gets to some things we were talking about. I went out to dinner with a bunch of tech and gadget reviewers from a bunch of different sites at this event. And we were like, recipes aren't written for this. Like,
right.
You don't know if your pan is at 200 degrees. Right. You don't care if your pan is right. 200 degrees.
Right.
So yes, but it is neat. And actually, GE is building that functionality into its new range tops. Range, is it range? Yeah.
Stove? I want to get an inductive stovetop.
We love ours.
Well, wait, yeah. Because I saw with the Wireless Power Consortium at this event what they were doing that I was at, and I'll get you back to Google in a minute, but they're standardizing on a higher voltage. It's not really high voltage, but greater wattage inductive power that they put underneath the counter, and then you could actually, with the right pan, cook directly on the countertop. Otherwise, you'd have like little coaster.
Oh my God! Wait a minute. So you probably don't want a Formica countertop.
No, if you have a Formica countertop, they make a coaster that kind of goes over to protect your.
But I have granite countertops. It would work with that.
It would not work there.
It would.
I don't think so. But you could put
what material does your countertop have to be made of?
Concrete?
I don't know.
Not metal.
No, not metal.
Then the whole thing would heat up.
But the little coaster thing is not crazy either. It's basically like a little burner that you stick on it. Anyway,
how much did you spend, Leo?
Wait, but it's for research purposes. I don't know. Like Stacy, I know how to saute. I know how to do that. It's $500 for the pan and the burner. Another $300 if you want the chef's pot.
$300 for one pot?
It's got a Bluetooth module in it.
I spent $300 on a pot that doesn't have Bluetooth in it.
Yeah. This will actually be part of the test is, are these actually, is it actually decent cookware? It kind of looks like it might be, but
you are
it's
IO-tested. It is nice cookware.
Like, it looks a little like Alclad or something. I use MasterChef, but it looks a little bit like that.
I see they don't have the Bluetooth yet. Sorry.
Is there a low-cost Tupperware version?
Okay. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought this up. But since Stacy was at the cooking event, I thought I'd mention it. It was all
Stacy, did you see anything better yesterday. Than this at the event?
Oh, I'm sure she
oh,
did.
Oh, you guys. I can't show it to you because it's for my newsletter this week. But next week, ask me about the Roti-matic because I did see that in Eat the Rotis.
Roti Jam.
It's a robot that makes flatbreads. Oh.
You talked about the Roti-matic before. So you actually sampled the Roti-matic.
I sampled the Roti-matic.
Wait, I'm the one who brought this up and you made fun of it.
This is $1,000 bread maker,
I brought this up on the show and you just poo-pooed this, Ms. IoT.
Well, she now has a different opinion.
I don't actually have a different. I would never buy this, but you know what? 40,000 people have. They have sold 40,000 of these.
$1,000 each?
Yes. Yes.
You know, the only reason I wouldn't buy this is because the last thing I need to do is eat a lot of roti. Roti is like there's naan, there's masala, these are those
flatbreads.
It makes
tortillas too, right? It makes any flatbread, right?
Yeah. It makes tortillas, it makes personal pizzas.
Oh, this is the last thing I need.
Pop-Tarts?
Follow the light.
Although I admit, I came this close to spending $1,000 on a leg of ham yesterday. So that's not including the holder.
Stacey? Talk him into it. Let's make this a challenge. Yeah. Before the end of the show, he's got a Roti-matic coming
here. Actually, there's somebody from Barcelona in the studio audience, and I can ask this, or near Barcelona, I can ask this question. Have you ever had a jamón ibérico in your house? Do you have to refrigerate
it? Of course.
You don't refrigerate it? Does it grow mold or something on it? No? You just shave it off and keep going. Okay.
Leo, you want this.
The Roti-matic?
You can make pizza, roti, tortillas.
I do want this. And I love this stuff. And the problem is, this is why I stopped baking in general. You make it, you eat it. I don't need it. It's like saying, here's a $1,000 cookie making machine.
Basically it just pops right off. It comes out like it's like a printer tray in like this hot, warm bread.
It's a bread printer. Just what I need.
Carsten, we need to find Stacy's ruling on this prior, though. I just want on the record.
Wait, first of all, look at the size of this thing. It would take over your kitchen.
Out of ink.
It's like an all-in-one printer. It's like a business printer.
It's Jetsons. It's the Jetsons.
Hey, I'll fax you a roadie.
Ooh, that would be awesome.
This kid really is getting into this. So they've sold, say that again, 40,000?
40,000. And it's not even for sale in India yet. It's only in the U.S.,
it's gonna be
Europe,
huge.
And Singapore.
And I want it. I would hope my office.
Oh, God. Well, you might as well have a butter maker.
How long does it take? Oh, yeah. You didn't want to talk about it yet. You want to talk about it next week. I know.
Oh, well, it takes. I just have a video that I took. It takes about 90 seconds to warm up, and then it's about a minute for each roti. Geez.
Oh, instant gratification.
In 5 minutes, you're 5 minutes away from there a roti.
Oh,
And this kid. 10 years from now,
I have a
that
a,
kid
a
is
real
be huge.
Food expert in the audience here is a friend of mine. Jesse, would you buy one?
No,
because
you'd eat it. No, I actually have
because
made
the roti's not good enough for you.
I've made naan myself. It's hard to make. You got to make the dough. You got to let it rise. You got to flatten it just so. You cook in the skillet. It's hard.
Yeah, and this actually like it has it well. Puffed up perfectly. Like you can see it.
That
in
was the
thing.
Problem. I wasn't getting puffing.
Yeah, it got it puffs. It's pretty impressive.
On the front page of the Rotimatic website, it says they've made 29,605,810 rotis.
And counting. It's like the old McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
How many rotis served?
It does look like a printer.
There's a little, yeah, anyway.
You don't have to get it for home. You could get it for the office.
Oh!
That's a good benefit call. Every office should have. Because you could just keep it running, right?
Yeah. And they wouldn't waste a lot of time on lunch, Leo. 1 minute, you got a roti.
Think how much you'd save in employee
now I'm
hours.
A little interested.
Lisa, can he buy a roti, Matt?
So what do? You keep it has a canister of flour in it?
It has flour, oil, and water. So you put those in the top, and you can put different types of flour, and there's software updates.
I'm sure he's hyperventilating right now.
And then it makes about 12 to 14 rotis before you need to refill the top. So,
okay, so we need to get canisters of flour as well.
Is it roti or rote?
Roti.
Roti. Okay.
R-O-T-I.
I call them naan.
But how are they going to puff up like
that? A different type of bread.
Yeah.
Oh.
Are they printed double-sided, Stacey?
Look at that.
But the United States Treasury does mandate that there's a hidden code in every roti. Wow, that is wild.
Did the count go up while we were here?
Yeah, the count is going up. Look at that. No, Carson really wants me to buy one of these.
It's pretty awesome. And you only have to clean like most of it once a week. And then every time you use it or every day, you clean these two little canisters where the dough has been.
Carson, if I bought one, you would have to say, I'll be in charge of cleaning it and maintaining it. I'm not going anywhere near it.
Absolutely.
He's on the record.
Burke is already
now
weighing
we've
in.
We've gone from no way to idea. If I bought it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're just about to do an upgrade for millet flour, which, you know, people love for vegan.
I'm
going to
wait on the millet upgrade.
No. It's just a software update. It's like, you know, your Juno.
There it is, Leo. Buy now. Buy now. No. Just see what options there are. Just click on it. Just see what options there are.
This costs as much as a Pixel 3 phone.
And a lot more useful. It feeds you.
It feeds you. That's like
look. It's got a real-time roti counter.
There it goes.
You can buy them in bulk.
How come
and you
Google
get a discount?
Gets in trouble because it's taking a lot of pictures, but privacy advocates don't care if you count the rotis.
Well, it's not.
Wait a minute. If I get 5 units, I can get them down to $8.99 each.
We could do a roti club.
Wants to join my roti club.
You could give it to people as like a
be a good holiday gift, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a 30-day full refund guarantee.
Oh, my gosh.
But there is limited stock, Leo. Oh, here we go.
I'm not going to buy that. I'm sorry. I have some limits.
I love costing you money.
I have some limits. So let's get back to Google. What do you say? You rarely hear me say that, kids, but in this case. So you've taken – is there anywhere else you've put pictures, Kevin? Because I'd love to see some images.
I actually have one more to share on this show, but I saved it for the very end just to make sure it stays.
Save it.
Yes.
Okay. I don't. The notch doesn't bother me. I do see it's kind of big, but I think people get used to notches. I, you know, when I first got the iPhone 10, I thought, oh, I don't
it's
want
just,
a notch.
It's just aesthetically.
Just get used to it. No, no, it's not. It's that's nothing.
It's a kludge. They're like kludges.
It's not a kludge.
Yeah. It's not ideal. I mean, I won't lie, but you know what? I got over it with my iPhone pretty quick. Yeah. I mean, I think the worst thing is when you're, say, watching a video or something. Let's mute this. But, you know, it didn't hurt the iPhone 10 sales when they came out with their notch. Granted, it's thinner. It's longer, but it's thinner. I think it'll be fine. I think the people who want the Pixel are going to get the Pixel, and you don't see it when you're watching video.
That's a point.
Yeah, still unless you do the zoom in. I don't know if it did it or not.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, see?
Right, and now you can see. Yep. So just don't do that, and it'll be fine.
It also has the thing I'm most interested in. So there are a couple of things that make camera phones not less than suitable as your main camera. One is it's got a single fixed angle, and digital zoom sucks. They have this capability, they say, of zooming better, super res zoom, and they do it with multiple images. You said that's not yet in your camera?
No, that's not here. And they said they kind of, I don't know if they borrowed the idea or leveraged technology. They said, this is how we like when we take photos of Mars, we clean them up.
Right.
You know, it's algorithms and interpolation and all that. So the demos looked fine, but that is not here yet on my unit.
So that's one issue that, you know, because I mean, the resolution, the quality of the image is really very good. So if you had zoom, because that's a big problem. You know, that's something I can do with a real camera, even a point and shoot that I can't do with a camera phone. What was the other issue?
The selfie zoom, maybe? Are you thinking?
I'm thinking of the shutter lag. So this has always been a problem, is the time to picture. And they're sort of solving that with the Top Shot.
Correct. Oh, correct. Right. That's not going to be an issue, I don't think. At least I've not seen that issue. Yeah.
Is a selfie camera a wide angle?
Two lenses, right?
They do have two lenses for the portrait mode. I don't know if I can do this or not. I kind of put you in selfie mode. It's kind of hard to see, I suppose. But there's a zoom feature down at the bottom where you can zoom in and zoom out. See if I can get it.
So it combines two images?
No. It's like a...
Well, it's not switching. There's something in between.
There's two lenses, you said.
Yeah,
there are two lenses. I don't think it switches for that. That's more for portrait mode. So that's zoomed out. That's more wide angle. And then if I slide over, I can go in for like close-up selfie.
I think that's nice. Yeah. Again, the question will be, is that digital? Is it optical? Is it how good does it look?
Well, what I'm asking is, when you hold it out, you get more people in the selfie.
Yeah, that's the idea. Right. Yeah.
You know
okay,
what?
But do they have the fisheye effect?
They do not, that I know of.
I do not want that in my selfie.
No, the big nose, the giant nose. Yeah.
I was going to say,
I think this actually does switch between the two cameras now that you mentioned. And the only reason I say that, not that they told me this, but on the zoom level, when I switch across the very center of it, meaning not zoom, so zoom in or zoom out, it kind of jumps a little bit like it is switching cameras.
So if you just put your thumb over the camera, over one of the cameras.
Well, then I wouldn't get to see anything. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you could tell
and
very quickly.
Good call, Jeff, because here you go. Let's see. Yeah, I'll zoom over and it disappears.
That's all processing.
Yeah.
It combined two images on two cameras seamlessly. Very that's very smart.
It's a Qualcomm 845 chip. That's a nice, fast chip. Although, according to recent benchmarks on the iPhone XS, it really doesn't hold a candle to the iPhone XS. On the other hand, how much speed do you need in a smartphone? And I think there's a big difference by adding that DSP chip for image processing. Then you're not relying on the 845 for all the work you're doing in the camera. I think this is a promising phone. How about the screen? Remember the? It's funny. This was when the Pixel 2 came out. Everybody was bitching about the screen and
burn-in and the blue, and
you don't hear much about that. Yeah. I don't know if it's because people stopped buying it or because it really wasn't as big of a problem. How do you feel about the screen on the Pixel 3, Kevin?
So I remember that issue. They had some, I would call it bad product, bad screens probably. I think they were using LG at the time. I suspect that they have switched over to a different partner, and that is very likely Samsung for this display because it's at least as good as the Galaxy 9s and whatnot. I think it looks fantastic.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know what, Kevin? I have the original, you know, first screen, and I think Leo's point is, whatever it was that was a problem, I'm completely used to it and don't notice the problem.
Well, and you know, and not everybody had the problem, so it could have been different production runs and so on. Okay. And you know, it's hard to say, Jeff, to be honest, because when you mass produce these things, you know, you're dealing with supply chain issues and whatnot.
Yeah.
If you're used to it, then you're going to be thrilled when you see this, because you're not going to. It's going to look fantastic to you, I think.
Yeah, but Jeff may not be getting it because he's saving his money.
It's going to be in Kevin's hands.
A roadie maker. If nothing else, they've promoted the use of roadie as a word in America, and that I commend them for. Let's take a break, and then we'll finally. You've been very good holding off deferred satisfaction. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the Pixelbook slate. Is there what? Oh, and the home. You have a home as well, right?
And the Pixelbook.
The home. Pixelbook. No, there isn't a new Pixelbook. There's home. Just a new slate.
Yeah,
they
just
no new Pixelbook.
Oh, they did a new version. New Pixel. Oh.
Yeah, that was one of the rumors was there'll be a Pixelbook too, but that did not materialize.
Okay, got it.
And then there is this Google Home Hub, which I'm sure you and Stacey talked about this morning.
In hours.
For hours.
So long.
We'll get the boiled down version of that in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage and Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years in a row now, according to J.D. Power. Rocket Mortgage is actually a creation of Quicken Loans. When you're customer-centric, any company that says customers first, and a service company, that's really important, I just love it. It just makes me happy because I'm a customer, right? And so Quicken Loans, one of the ways they become the biggest lender in the nation is by really thinking about the customer experience. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Instead of going to a bank and filling out a long application, doing a lot of research, going to the attic to get old bank statements or calling your former employers to get old pay stubs, they do all that work for you. And Rocket Mortgage is entirely online. So you don't have to leave your armchair or your open house. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/twig and the whole process happens there, and it happens fast. Actually, it's a three-step process. Quicken Loans calls Rocket Mortgage's process the power buying process. So step one, and we've talked about this before, you go to rocketmortgage.com/twig, create an account, answer a few simple questions. They'll check your credit, and you get pre-qualified approval. And you get to, at that point, pick the term, the rate, the down payment, everything. And this is 10 minutes. So this is already way ahead of anything any bank can do. But then step two, over the next 24 hours, they will verify your income, your assets, and your credit, and they will give you verified approval. Now, that's huge because that's basically saying you got the loan. You get a letter that says, you know, this is they have verified approval. That means you're basically a cash buyer. When you go to make an offer on a house, the seller says, oh, well, you know, you go right to the front of the line because unlike the other bidder, or two or three these days, it's very competitive. It's not a contingency. You don't have to get a loan. You've got a loan. You're verified. So that's fantastic. And let's add step three, which is unique to Rocket Mortgage. It's all new, and I love it. They call it Rate Shield Approval. And this wasn't an issue in the last few years because the interest rates were very stable. They're going up now. You probably noticed that. The Fed's raising rates. Home loan rates are going up. As a result, there's some uncertainty when you're out there home hunting. You're saying, we better buy quick because what if the rates go up? And, you know, a quarter interest point on a 30-year loan might mean tens of thousands of dollars. So that's a big deal. And that's pressure. That means there's some anxiety. That means you feel like, I got to buy. I got to buy now. And you don't want that. So what they've done, once you get verified approval, is they lock in the rate. This is Rate Shield Approval for up to 90 days. So you have up to 3 months to shop. And the rate can't go up. Even if the Fed raises it, even if the LIBOR goes up or whatever the loan's based on goes up, your rate is locked. It's guaranteed. Here's another nice feature. If the rates go down, your rate goes down. So it just can't go up. I love that. Either way, you win. That's customer-centric, right? That's thinking about, you know, there's some anxiety here about rates. Let's fix that. RocketMortgage.com/twig. Rate Shield Approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions might apply. It's based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Of course, They're an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, numbered 3030. You don't have to remember all that. Just remember rocketmortgage.com/twig and take advantage of the power buying process entirely online. rocketmortgage.com/twig. You know, when you go to the bank to get that loan, we went to the big bank when we bought our house 5 years ago, Lisa and I, and you have to kind of get all cleaned up. Banks don't lend money to people who need the money. This is what you learn. So you have to look prosperous. I don't need your money. I'm just here to inquire about a loan. I'm ready for my loan. RocketMortgage.com/twig. You can do it in your jammies. All right. Now, let's...
So breaking headline, The Verge. Google failed to justify the Pixel 3 XL's massive notch.
This is such bogosity.
Wait, did they talk about the massive price increase? Let's have them justify that.
Is it
that.
A massive price increase?
Stacey, is it? I thought I spent about that much on mine, the two.
I think it's like $100 more at least, if not $150.
I don't think so.
I mean, mine was, I feel like mine was $700.
So right now you can get a Pixel 2 for $745. That's, I think, $50 off.
Yeah, that's a lower price than it was.
So, but I don't... Maybe that's the is that the Pixel 2 XL, in which case it would be $100 less than the Pixel 3 XL. But I think this I don't know if it's a would you call
I don't
it
think
a
it's
massive?
A massive price increase.
And part of the problem is that I buy iPhones.
Yeah.
So I paid for the last iPhone $1,250, and that's not even the most expensive one you can get. I don't think so.
Chump.
Did you just say chump?
I coughed.
I'm looking for my receipt from the Google store from last November.
Oh, I could find that. Actually, I could do that. Yeah, because it's a virtual receipt.
Yeah, here it is.
That's a good question. How much did it cost last time around?
Oh, that was my live case. Not helpful. That was $40.
So I bought a Pixel 2 XL for $949. Ended up with tax to be $1,026 October 4th, 2017. So that's 128 gigs. So it's $50. It's $50 less than what I paid this time for the same.
I got the Pixel 2 64 gigabytes for $649. So I paid $702.54.
So that would be $749 now. So it is $100 more.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Well, that's a point, yeah. Stacey. Yep.
I guess they figured Apple, you know, has shown that you can get that kind of money for a high-end flagship, and let's do it. I mean, Samsung's getting
volumes,
up there, too.
They might as well sell price.
Yeah.
I mean, the stand is $80, which is way overpriced, too. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
That's Apple accessory land.
They did give us a USB-C headphones. Yay.
Yeah, and an adapter, which Apple has now left out of the box.
Which is ridiculous.
I mean, talk about cheap. Because Apple knows you pay $20 for that adapter if you really want to use it. Apple's excuse on that was, we found out nobody uses wired headphones anymore.
Hmm.
Not on our. I love wired.
Yeah.
We asked three people and none of them.
Nobody.
None of them use headphones.
Nobody
with
at
wire.
The Apple campus.
No.
All right. Let's talk about the slate because poor Jeff is just ready to write a check. The Pixel Slate. Now, pricing is confusing on this because this keyboard and the pen are separate.
Correct. But if you have an old pen, it will work with the Slate.
Ah, so the
Which
pen
I
that
have.
Came with the PixelBook 2
but
will
to
work.
Come with, I had to buy it.
Oh, you bought that one. Okay.
But
that's
I already,
right. That was $100.
I'm a chump. And I
what do you think of the keyboard? This is the Bridge BRYDGE keyboard. I know Jeff hates bridges.
that's actually the Google keyboard for $199, and that is a... amazing keyboard, but I talked to the head of product management here at Google and said, look, I'm obviously going to buy this and I will buy the keyboard as well as the Slate, but people are going to balk at a $200 keyboard when Microsoft sells theirs for $99 to like $129,
right.
And Apple sells theirs for $159, I believe. And the response was, look, here's the deal. You know, if people want a keyboard, they'll have choice of keyboards. And the Bridge model actually is $159.
Oh, okay.
So there's that. And that's more of a traditional laptop type keyboard experience. They said to kind of justify this price, they said, look, we're giving you a large glass trackpad that works with a mouse. iOS doesn't have that at all. So you're not even getting that with an Apple keyboard. And we have adjustable angles, infinite adjustable, which this, I thought, from an engineering standpoint, was brilliant. You can take that back cover, and there are magnets in the rails of the Pixel slate in the back of it, and you can adjust it to any angle you would like. It's fantastic.
It's kind of smooth, too, it looks like, right?
Yes, that is correct.
So that's what, you know, the response they gave you is telling to me, because as we're looking at this and as we're looking at pricing, I'm wondering, there's two ways you could go. Is this to compete with a Surface Pro, the Windows tablet, which also has a separate keyboard and pen, or is this to compete with the iPad Pro? And it sounded like they were referring to the iPad. So they see this as the iPad is the natural competitor?
I guess that's what they see it as. I was going to say the answer to your question is yes. This is a true competitor to both, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yes. Granted, and that's because you're getting a desktop browser, so you get the desktop feel of Microsoft, obviously not the legacy apps, although they did say this will support the Linux apps as well. And then you get the mobile experience of, you know, the touchscreen and Android apps. So it's kind of attacking both, in my opinion.
That's a good point. If you run it with Android apps, then it's an iPad replacement. If you run it with the Chrome browser, it's more like Windows, although there aren't Windows apps. Although there's a pretty good set of apps available for the Chrome.
Now, Kevin, you and I have talked about this before. I'm still concerned on my beautiful Pixel that the Android apps just aren't great. Anything that has DRM is a pain in the butt and doesn't work very well. And trying to go back and forth with apps not built for the larger screen, a Chrome tablet. Just full stop. Chrome tablet versus Android tablet. I'm still concerned about how mature Chrome is for this use. What's your thought?
Well, it's a totally fair point. I tend to use the browser when I can instead of apps because, say, for Netflix, because I know you've had issues with Netflix, the Android app version. Yes, you might want to download Netflix videos and watch them, and you can do that with the Android version if it's working well for you. I go with the browser because you get higher resolution, partially because of the DRM, and I don't have to worry about an app.
But you can't download for the plane.
No, you can't. You're correct.
In international lands where I am a lot.
That's totally valid. You're absolutely right. That's a limitation for sure. Google has really put the framework out there for app developers and these large companies such as Netflix, for example, to make it work. And they just haven't for some reason. And I'm not sure why.
I think the market is tiny, right?
You know, I guess, yeah, if you're going to invest the time and effort and resources to developing mobile apps, you're going to go where mobile app engagement is the highest, and people are doing things on iPads and iPhones, and that's where a lot of folks focus their efforts when it comes to third-party stuff. So I don't know what Google can really do unless they say, look, we'll help you, we'll put some engineering time behind it, and just make it better. I kind of wish they would do that and you know, put some resources behind helping these guys, because other than that, I don't know what they can do, Jeff. That's the problem.
Yeah, I talked to a product head from Chrome OS at I.O., and he was arguing surprise at the problem with Netflix. But it's obviously there. It's difficult. It crashes a lot. It doesn't come on. It doesn't remember things. And then the further problem I have is, guess what I'm going to complain about? Being a G Suite user, trying to install new apps into Chrome is just torture. It's 87 steps. It's easier to become a citizen these days.
Yeah, that's a problem. And I think I go back to Google on that one. They never really thought that out well.
Yep.
To have that, like, they didn't. I don't think they figured mere mortals and consumers would get G Suite accounts that was really geared towards, say, enterprise and small business.
Yeah.
But now that's created a whole problem. And I know they're working on it because I've seen code changes about adding certain flags and features to control in the Google Chrome admin stuff. So, you know, it's one of the questions I get all the time on about Chromebooks is, you know, hey, how do I get Google Assistant on my Pixelbook? You know, the first question I ask is, well, do you have a G Suite account? You know, and here are the steps you have to do. Here's the support page. You've got to jump through a lot of hoops.
Torture. Yeah. All right. So Chrome as tablet app and Chrome OS, G Suite, Android not working well together are my two concerns. So the other question I'll ask is just simply, if today you didn't have a Pixelbook, you didn't have a Slate, which would you buy?
So I personally, and granted the pricing is high on the Slate in my opinion, we'll get to the pricing in a bit, I'm sure. I personally would go with a Pixel Slate, and that is because even with the Pixelbook, and I have a Surface Pro as well for class, I use those in tablet mode at least 50% of the time because when I'm not working, writing, coding, whatever, I'm watching Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, YouTube TV, et cetera, and I prefer to have just a portable screen that I can hold or put stand up next to me wherever I am. The other reason, again, for me, and maybe for everybody else, in fact, the Pixelbook did not get a refresh, as we said earlier on the show. It is running the 7th gen Intel processors, whereas the Pixel Slate has the 8th gen Intel processors. So, and it also has a range of processors from Celeron to M3 to i5 to i7. So you're getting better performance and probably better power efficiency as well. Google said 12 hours of mixed use on the Slate, which is amazing because that's 7 millimeters thin, that Slate.
Yeah.
So it's crammed with battery. In fact, the battery is all around the corners of the device. The boards are in the very middle, so that way it is completely balanced however you hold it.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh. That's
yeah, nice. Very well designed.
And does the keyboard constantly trickle charge the way the old Pixel tablet keyboard did?
Nope.
You got to charge the keyboard?
No. Nope. It gets its power from the
power from base. The unit. Okay.
Just like an iPad
because it's not
keyboard.
Bluetooth. Right. It's connected.
It's got these Pogo pins on the bottom.
Right.
Yes. Google uses the Pogo pins, so there's no battery or anything needed. It gets all its data and power from the Slate itself. Bridge is offering their G-Type keyboard, and that is Bluetooth, so it's not using the Pogo pins. You do have to charge that. They say every, I think, 3 to 6 months, but, I mean, if you're using that thing full-time, I don't know about that. My issue with the Bluetooth is I've used Bluetooth keyboards with my Pixelbook in tablet mode, for example, just for testing, and sometimes the on-screen keyboard pops up while it's trying to reestablish a connection to the hardware keyboard. So it's just not cohesive as one unit, whereas the Google keyboard is. And it's not a knock on Bridge. They've always used Bluetooth, so maybe they will change now in the future and go with Pogo pins for their iPad Pro keyboards and the Pixel Slate. I don't know.
So I obviously write a lot. Some would say too much. writing on the Slate versus the Pixelbook.
So I'll just give you first impressions because anytime I use a different keyboard, I usually give myself a couple of days to get used to it. Saying that, I spent about an hour, maybe an hour and a half with the two different keyboards. The Bridge keyboard is very much like the actual keyboard of the Pixelbook. The Google keyboard is quite good also. It took me a little bit of time to kind of get the feel of those circular keys. But Google said, and we asked them about this, Google said, you know, when we did some research and we found that people are actually more accurate with the circular keys because they're less likely to hit other keys because of the spacing. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I haven't done any tests on my own, but it does make sense.
I'm very interested in that, yeah.
You won't hear the keys either, Jeff, at all. They're
very quiet.
Hush keys.
Yeah.
Hush keys. It's amazingly quiet.
But there's
quiet.
Decent travel?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, because that's what I like the clickety-clickety of my keys.
You want to know you're accomplishing something, right, Stacey?
Exactly. Plus, it helps me get my emotion out in my writing. I'm like, oh.
She's a
I'm
banger.
Sure there's a
She's
Chrome
a
extension,
banger.
Stacey, you could install. It just makes a noise every time you hit the key.
So the... It's a really interesting product idea because it does. They didn't mention Crostini, but they did say it'll run Linux apps. So Crostini is enabled on this. So you can run, if you're a high end user, you can run high end command line based apps from the GNU Linux world. You can run Android, and it is a powerful device. This is the. But the problem is the power comes at a great with great power comes great price.
Yes.
So the base unit, the one they quote, the $599 unit, which is a Celeron, 4 gigs of RAM, which I think is ample, and 32 gig storage or 6 gigs of RAM and 64 gig storage. starts at $599, although I think you'll pay more for the 8 gig version. Then there's a M3, that's the mobile, kind of crappy mobile Intel processor, better than a Celeron, $799. You can get an i5, that's probably what's in your Pixelbook, Jeff, if you bought the $1,000 Pixelbook. Yep. That's the same price.
Correct.
In fact, spec-wise, this 8th generation i5 processor is the same price, minus the keyboard and pen, as your Pixelbook is.
So this costs more, in other words.
Yeah, and you may want to, but what's nice is the i7 processor includes 16 gigs of RAM, 250 gigs storage, but I can't remember. I think that, was that a $1,300
I think so.
SKU for the Pixelbook? So
I think it's $1,499 okay. At least.
So
it's
this
up
is,
there.
This one is $1,599 for the slate.
Plus that also had 512 gig of
storage. Oh, that's right. It
storage.
Did. It had more
right.
storage. Although, yes. I don't know why anybody wants a lot that? Of storage on
well,
a Chromebook.
Well, unless you're storing a hell of a lot of Netflix. But
maybe.
So you know why I can't get this?
Why?
This show.
Why?
Skype.
Oh, you don't have
to. I got, when I'm in the friggin' hotel, Carson's going to kill me. So I'm in the friggin' hotel room.
You can't really use Skype on these, can you?
Skype on this doesn't work. And so I took along my Android tablet, and Skype is better on that.
Right.
But Skype on a Chrome device won't work with a darn.
We should figure out, while you're here, in fact, before you leave, we should figure out some alternative that you can use on your Chromebook, like Hangouts or something.
Ooh.
Can't we do that, Carson and John?
What about Zoom? You know, Zoom works well.
Does Zoom work on that?
Blue Jeans works well.
All right, we can use Zoom.
Yeah, I've never tried Zoom. We should try
Zoom or Blue Jeans.
We'd have to. Do we have to on our machines, Karsten, put a... No, Zoom is... You need a Zoom client, but it's in the browser, right?
I think so.
On both ends, I think.
I think it's on the browser.
I don't want to derail us there.
I've never used it before.
So we should try a couple of things.
I mean, the other thing I'm thinking about doing is buying the cheapest Microsoft tablet so I can get Skype.
Yeah, but you don't want to carry.
I don't want to carry two.
No, you don't want to carry more than one.
All right, enough of Jeff.
I actually think this is overpriced. I have to say.
I think you're right. Or
hold on. Or you could use Skype for Linux once Google has the audio capabilities in the Project Christini added.
Yeah.
They don't currently, but you can't even get this yet. You have some time, or they have some time, I guess, to get it in there maybe before the pre-orders all start. So we'll have to see that once that's there, Jeff, because I'll run into the same problem with the IoT podcast that Stacey and I do, for example. Now, I do have the Surface Pro, and that's what I use right now for podcasting. But if I can do it on the slate with
You'd be happier.
Linux.
Yeah, I'd be happier too.
Yep.
Right now it's waitlist and you can't buy it. What did they say when it would be available, later this month or in November? Or?
I pushed really hard with the PR folks. They were laughing at me, almost crying. I was pushing so hard to get a release date. And then I spoke to the product manager and he kind of gave me a smirky little smile and just said, year end, by year end. But I did find out today that Best Buy temporarily had a listing for all of these Pixel slates showing a release date of November 22nd. Oh. That has been changed, but I grabbed a screenshot before they changed it. So I thought about it, and I'm like, you know, why would that be? Why is it not ready yet? Well, the Pixel slate that I used, all of them actually, they were all running the dev channel version 71. And there were still some software glitches. Yeah. There's still some things in the commit log that they're working on, minor hardware things. I suspect that when 71 rolls out, that's kind of what the holdup is here.
Okay.
Some of my readers have said, well, you know, the FCC has not approved this yet. There's fine print underneath the Google Store listing for this. And I get that. But the iPhone XR also has that same listing. It just because it hasn't been approved yet doesn't mean that's what they're rating on.
How impressive is the screen?
The screen specs are fantastic. It's 3,000 by 2,000, which is almost 300 pixels per inch, 12.3 inches. It does. I wish it didn't have such massive bezels. But
Google and bezels. They
Google
just can't
loves
get
its bezels.
But part of the argument on the bezels is handling it.
Yep.
I guess.
Yeah. I'm not anti-bezel.
So what does it look like, Kevin? Because you're the one who's seen it.
So I'm kind of like a screen snob. Like you know, as soon as 4K TVs came out and HDR TVs came out, I'm upgrading. I was blown away. I got to be honest. Yeah. We were
That's going to be the biggest difference between this and a Pixelbook.
Yes. Yes, because it seemed brighter to me. I don't know the exact brightness on the specs, but when we looked at some 4K videos, HDR videos, I mean, I'm like, wow, this looks fantastic. I can't find out for sure if it's a true HDR display, but it looked like it to me. I mean, again, I was just blown away. And so, they got some new technology in there too. They're calling it this molecular display, where I'm certainly not a physicist or a scientist, but this sounded weird to me. They make the electrons move 100 times faster than other LCD panels.
The hyper
display. And I'm like, how do you do that? I mean, then you should be able to get to Mars in 3 days. You know?
So which one would each of you buy? If you're going to buy one of those.
Well, you're going to have to get at least the i5.
The i5.
I think that's what I'm going to do. I think mainstream people who want to spend a little more than your average mid-range Chromebook would be fine with the Celeron or the M3. I'd probably go M3 if I were them. But I will go with the i5 and the 8 gig of RAM and that storage, because that's what I have in my Pixelbook. I run Linux apps. I compile some code on it. I do Android apps. Everything I need to do.
You would use this instead of your Pixelbook. It would replace it.
Oh, my Pixelbook. I already have talked to two people who are interested in buying my Pixelbook. Absolutely. It's going away.
Oh, geez, you are heartless.
Well, I should point out it's a big jump in price from $999 to $1,599.
But you're still, so you're $1,299. You're $1,300. No, $1,200 here with the keyboard.
Oh, correct. Yeah, don't forget. Keyboard's $200 and the
plus
pen is
service.
You already have the $99 pens. So you need to buy that.
Plus service.
And you're going to buy the service, huh? Yeah, I mean, it's expensive. There's no question it's expensive.
It's got to be your sole machine. It's got that price. Yes. It ain't just some tablet thing. It is your sole machine.
Yes. Well, the Pixelbook has been my sole machine.
Same here.
Except for podcasting, quite honestly.
Same here.
Yeah.
I would not be the first in line to buy it in general, just because Google's had troubles in the past, and I would give it a month.
But you bought the phone.
See the reviews. Well, the phone, the phone is.
Let me ask you this, Leo, because you use a Pixelbook today. So what does your Pixelbook not do since you bought it? I mean, it meets certain
needs. No, the Pixelbook's fine. I don't need this slate at all. Yeah.
But really, this is a Pixelbook. The power of the Pixelbook, the same basic configuration.
Here's the three things you don't get in a Pixelbook. We mentioned the screen. Battery life is a lot better, it sounds like. You haven't had it long enough to really know.
No.
But if it lives up to the spec and you know, it sounds like they've really made an attempt to put more than all day battery life in it. And the third thing, I don't know how important this is, it sounds like they got better cameras in it. And there's front and back. Right. Which always worries me, because I see people taking pictures with their tablets. Those three things are improvements. I don't think 7th to 8th generation Intel makes a big difference.
Stacey, what's your computer on the road now?
Oh, I'm a MacBook Air on the road at home.
Okay.
I need to update it.
Well, would you consider
stay tuned,
because
Apple will probably update this year.
No, because I'm a content creator, and I don't want to deal with...
Fair.
Yeah, that's. I mean, truthfully, I don't use a Pixelbook as my main computer. I use a Mac.
You can't. I can.
And I hate that. Actually, I should say this, because y'all are smart. I don't like the MacBook Pro keyboard.
Yeah,
I don't like
I hate it.
It sticks. Mm. So I'm gonna very soon. I'm gonna have to. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Yeah,
I've got to find a new computer.
You and a lot of Apple lovers. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine going back.
Follow
to, like,
the
a
light,
Bilbo.
Stacey. Come to Chrome.
Okay,
I think the creator problems are there, but I do believe with the power of these machines, they're going to solve that soon.
I have to edit video. I have to edit a podcast.
That's what I'm saying. I think you're going to be able to, with as much memory as you get in this thing, with the power of it. You know, we've debated on the show before whether you could ever do that virtually. I mean, that's to say over the network, but I think we'll get there.
I might mention, as long as we're talking about screens, that DisplayMate tweeted, we haven't seen the report yet, it's coming out Monday, that the Google Pixel 3 XL OLED display is the highest A-plus rating in a DisplayMate Best Smartphone Display Award.
Whoa. Mm. Take that, Apple fanboys.
But that's good news. I mean, even, look, people like DxOMark and DisplayMate, every time something new comes out, seem to have, this is the best we've ever seen.
Yeah.
But even if it's not the best screen ever, if it's better than the Pixel 2, I think that's really good news, because that was the one complaint people had about the Pixel 2 XL in particular, that OLED screen. Home Hub, 7-inch display. Why did Google explain to you, why did they make it so small, Kevin?
Well, they kind of, I don't know that they really explain that. My take on it is that they wanted to simplify the smart home and have a kind of very focused device just for that. And that's different from the larger smart displays. Like, I have the 10-inch Lenovo smart display, and that is fantastic for content consumption as well. And I don't think they really wanted to get into splitting the functionality of this too much.
Okay. In fact, it has an analog clock on it.
Only thing that mine does. It's a clock.
Your bedside clock.
It is a very
clock.
Expensive friggin' clock.
It also keeps the price down, $149. So it's not much more than the famous 7-inch Android tablet that we all loved so much that Google sold some years ago.
God, I missed that.
I think it's a kind of akin to the Amazon Echo Spot, only it's much more functional with a larger screen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, the
no
round
camera.
Screen on the Spot kind of hinders it a little bit.
I think it was like a cool design, but
yeah.
Still a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I would actually put this in my closet where my Spot is. That would be reasonable. My Spot is basically my alarm clock with some voice additional stuff. I thought it was really interesting. Google made a point of saying no camera.
Oh, that's the Lisa point. Yeah.
No camera on this.
Unlike Facebook's.
By the way, I did order Facebook's portal.
Oh, why, Leo?
I had to act. Well, because I have to.
Your wife pointed out that this required you to reactivate Facebook.
It was extremely frustrating.
Send it back right now.
No.
I may end up sending it back. I had to order two. This is the Facebook. This is such a tone-deaf product from Facebook, which is facing all these privacy concerns. This thing has a camera built in that follows you automatically. Oh, sure. No problem. Put that in your house. Now Facebook can look around.
So Kevin and I talked briefly about this, but here's the thing. Yes, is this a privacy debacle? Would people be excited about this? No. But Facebook, they've kind of been focused so much, remember, web, and then they switched to mobile. And now we're entering this world with digital assistants, and we're trying not to look at screens as much. Yes,
right.
There is a screen component there. But how do you spend time with your community if you don't call them on some weird communication device, right? If you're not looking at a screen all the time. So they have to have some play here. It's just unfortunate that they're Facebook.
Well, it doesn't have Facebook on it. It's the other weird thing. You can't use it to browse Facebook.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
No.
It's very limited.
It's a weird product.
This is Facebook's equivalent of the Android of the Amazon phone.
It's basically a video phone. It's like the AT&T video phone that they showed at the 1965 World's Fair.
I think this is they'll have sold two to you and maybe two to every other major publication out there that has to review gadgets, and they'll be like, "Yes, we've sold 500
devices." Private by design section here. Apparently, it means that there's a clip you could put over the camera. That's it. That's by design. You can disable the camera. Oh, and by the way, Facebook does not listen to, view, or keep the contents of your portal video calls. It has Amazon's Echo built in, not Jarvis. I thought they should have put Jarvis in it, right?
Yeah.
But I guess the Amazon Echo. This is why I'm buying it, because I want to read. Jarvis didn't scale. It's only a user of one. I want to be able to read stories to my children and be the little pig or be the wolf. And apparently when you're reading the story, it puts a little wolf face on you when you do the wolf spot.
Oh,
you want to see the story time one more time. Is there audio on this? We don't really want to hear it if there is. That's story time. So I ordered it. Remember, when I order buy stuff, even like cookware, I'm not buying it as a private citizen. I'm buying it for Twit.
So then don't you need a roadie robot?
No. That's exactly my point. I have to buy technology stuff.
It's not technology, it's a
bread maker.
There are seven different AI innovations in that roti maker. It's a very impressive robot.
Stacey Higginbotham, you are the devil.
I am.
All right, maybe I'll buy the roti thing.
Hey, you know what's good on rotis?
What?
Queso.
Oh.
You guys are trying to kill me. You just want me to have a heart attack. I know. I could tell.
They're healthy. Rotis are very healthy.
There's nothing healthy about a roti.
It's not deep fat fried or anything.
It's got lots of butter on it.
No, a little bit of oil. These don't come out with butter.
But there's oil in there. How much? It goes through the oil pretty quick, I betcha.
Oh, Leo.
Twit needs to watch the carbs. And I say that not as a private citizen. So that's Facebook's competitor to the Google Home Hub. $349 for the 15-inch display. $290, but you buy two, you save $100.
Just like the Roti robot, you can get a discount for buying more than one.
Yeah, can you? Yeah, yeah, oh, I could buy eight robots. Yeah. So back to the home. this doesn't have a camera. That's how we got to this, yeah. Which I thought was really smart of Google. This is not a Google calling device. This is a this is like an Echo Show, kind of, right?
Yeah, you could do a call on it, but obviously the other person will not see you. You'll just see them. So you could do a Duo call if you know anybody on Duo.
Does it work with non-Google smart home products like, say, my Ring doorbell? I presume it does. I would hope it does.
The new software? Or the
yeah, because I know it works great with the Nest on the home.
Well, yeah, anything that works with Google. Now, I don't know if Ring actually has an integration with Google Home because that is now owned by Amazon.
Right.
Now, Arlo, it will show my Arlo cameras.
No, okay, good. So that's the key.
But you'll have to actually ask it to show the Arlo, whereas the Nest integration just obviously works. Yeah, it just shows up, right?
Google Photos also tightly integrated. It becomes a photo frame. It's funny how the photo frame is now once again in a live category.
Yeah.
Okay, we mock that, but my in-laws love their
photo they do. Sure they do.
So I'm like, eh.
And so do the Chinese government.
Paranoid.
So just from a journalistic point of view, I got three really talented quality journalists here with me, all three of you. Did Bloomberg Business Week screw up?
Okay.
We're talking about, for those of you who are saying, what is he talking about? On Thursday, Bloomberg Business Week put out a story about Super Micro motherboards that had been hardware hacked by Chinese spies to include a special chip on it that looked about the size of a grain of rice, that looked like a normal support chip, but actually phoned home. Jordan Robertson and Michael Riley, the authors of the article, claimed they had 17 anonymous sources, both in Apple, Amazon, and the federal government, that it said, yes, there was this chip. Amazon discovered it when they were doing due diligence before they bought the Elemental Technologies. We use an Elemental, but so does the Department of Defense. Elementals are used for drones. They're used in the Pentagon. They're used by the Mormon Church. It would be an excellent device to place, you know, a spy chip on. Then the next day, massive denials from every company involved saying that never happened. It's wrong and misinformed, said Apple. I'll tell you what I think. I think it's not important whether it was Super Micro or not. And by the way, there is a corroborating story also from these authors the next day or the day, or I guess it was Sunday, saying that a security expert named Appleboom had discovered a similar chip on a Super Micro motherboard destined for a U.S. telecom. But Appleboom did not deny it. But what he says is really the real point is this is happening all the time. You can't control the supply chain. Sometimes it happens at the factory. More often it happens in the process of mailing the motherboards. That the U.S. does it just as much as every other government does it. It happens all the time, and it's been going on for years. And we even years ago, we reported on this on Security Now. A modified Ethernet chip was found in a motherboard that was phoning home. So that's the bottom line. And whether the details of this are accurate or not, this is absolute. Nobody denies that this happens. It's a problem. And that these companies absolutely don't want you to talk about it because it's bad for business for everybody. But did Bloomberg Business Week screw this up?
I don't know. Stacey, you were starting to say something.
I,
Sigh.
I can't imagine that Bloomberg
17 sources
would have. It is possible they didn't see the whole story. It is also possible that our government is telling people to, like, I tend to believe that Bloomberg thought they were right. Right.
Well, and, I know they thought they were right. They would not have. But I mean, this is a prestigious.
But I mean, people do screw things up, but it feels like this isn't a screw up so much as this is, I can see the back half of the elephant and I'm calling it a rhinoceros.
Right.
And then everyone's like, nope, no rhinoceros is here, is what it feels like.
Right. So, you agree, Jeff? I mean, what do you tell your students about this one?
I don't know, because I think we need more reporting.
Presumably, I mean, I'm going only from what I've learned about journalism from the, you know, the Post. But presumably, these two reporters, 17 sources, that's a lot of sources. That's, a lot of people said they're anonymous. I don't find that a problem at all. That's normal operating procedure.
Unfortunately, but yes.
Especially with national security issues, because you're not going to go on the record with this. If it were two, if it were three, I would say, oh, maybe they were being played by the national intelligence agencies who probably have a vested interest. I know our administration has a vested interest in deprecating Chinese manufacturers, so maybe that was. But if 17, some of them from Amazon, some of them from Apple, that's an awfully large number. Presumably, these two guys don't just get to put that on the magazine. By the way, it was on the cover of the magazine. That there's an editor and a boss and a publisher, all of whom say, okay, well, who are the sources? Let me see your notes, who are doing some verification, right?
Right, right.
They're not doing it publicly.
The Economist is the chief of all content at Bloomberg.
So that, these are quality people. And Bloomberg's standing behind it. They're not putting the reporters out, hanging them out.
It's just weird that the 17 sources versus the vehement denials from those same
companies.
That's
the hard thing to explain.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And the question, you know, on Mac Break Weekly, of course, the Mac guys, Andy and Akko, said, oh, come on, Apple's not going to lie. Here's a question.
Apple is the king of the artful denial. But these are actually artful.
These were not artful. They were unequivocal. Is there SEC or some sort of regulatory issue if a publicly held company lies about something like this?
Well, unless your point is there, is that they were, you know, would they follow the orders of government to lie?
They said even we have not been told to lie.
But
that's like the first rule of Fight Club. Yeah.
And I guess if the SEC, well, first of all, the SEC already knows. But if somebody went after them, let's say a shareholder lawsuit. They would say, oh, judge, let's go in your chambers, and I want to just tell you something. And they show them the national security letter that says you may not, under any circumstances, reveal this. And the judge says, okay, I'm going to dismiss out of hand. I can't tell you why. There will be more. I mean, we're not done. If this happened, there will be more.
I think the interesting thing you said, Leo, is whether it could happen someplace else along the chain.
It doesn't. Yes, that's the point. It doesn't matter, really.
Interesting, yeah.
Supermicro is taking a huge bath.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter if Supermicro knew or didn't know or did it in the factory. These things happen all the time.
Isn't there physical proof that somebody has of this little tiny chip? There's a picture of the tiny thing on the finger.
Okay, so, hold on. Yes. Okay. So you would have to have physical proof of the chip. Bloomberg doesn't have that. That picture was an illustration.
Right. Yes, and so, in fact, the one guy on the record in the story said, I gave him that chip. Fitzpatrick said, that's a picture I sent them. They reused. It wasn't the chip we found. It was just an example.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they don't have the chip. Somewhere, someone has the chip, if there is a chip. And the idea – so let's talk about what this means from a macro perspective, because this is a big deal. And this is a supply chain that we to get something equivalent, we would have to look for the – like how we brought car manufacturing back to the U.S. and the like Japanese car manufacturing to the U.S. from – in like the 80s and 90s, because we have outsourced so much of this production. We don't have the capabilities. I mean, I remember going through a packaging plant, which puts a lot of these components on a board and packages it up for servers and that sort of thing. That shut down like 18 years ago. So, you know, we can't just bring this back. And this is an easy thing to sort of infiltrate. These are contractors, subcontractors come into this world. It is not It is not secret. So putting a component like this on a board, it's possible. It's theoretically possible.
It's more than possible. It's already happening, and everybody knows it's happening. Everybody's acknowledged it's happening. Even Brian Krebs says, mm-hmm. back 10 years ago when I was a reporter from the Washington Post, I heard from an extremely well-placed source that one Chinese tech company was on the United States blocked entity list because they sold a custom hardware component for many internet-enabled printers. It secretly made a copy of every document or image sent to the printer and forwarded it to the Chinese government. That was 10 years ago. We know this happens. There have been many stories. We also know these stories are oftentimes quashed, and that everybody involved, from the U.S. government to these companies, doesn't want these stories to become well-known. Brian says in his article, supply chain security is the whole enchilada, but no one's willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. That we have literally, as you said, Stacey, given up on manufacturing in the United States.
Isn't that what blockchain is meant to fix? Yeah. I'm joking.
Blockchain. Like it or not, he does this in italics, the vast majority of electronics are made in China, and this is unlikely to change anytime soon. The central issue is we don't have any other choice right now. The reason is that by nearly all accounts, it would be punishingly expensive to replicate that Amen. Manufacturing process here in the United States.
True that.
And so it's, and by the way, it isn't just China. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this is not military espionage or cyber warfare. A lot of it's industrial espionage.
Well, the other question, if we're going to get paranoid, is what does our own government do to our own citizens?
Well, we know the NSA is doing this kind of stuff. Right. Edward Snowden revealed it.
Right.
He was the one who talked about that Ethernet chip. So this isn't a new story. The only thing really new in this story is the specifics about Supermicro, Amazon, and Apple. Maybe they got... I think you might be right, Stacey. They thought it was a rhinoceros when it was really an elephant, but...
Did you see the IEEE story about the X-ray and optical technology that you could run your boards through just to check if there's any unauthorized or deviations from the design?
No, that's
I thought that was kind of cool.
ChipWorks does that.
ChipWorks takes things apart.
I think X-ray too.
Okay, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you would X-ray it, but.
Yeah. So anyway, good. I wanted to bring that up. That isn't the biggest story by any means here. We've already done the way.
I think it actually is.
Well, it's a huge story for journalists, and it's a huge story in general for
But
tech.
There's a certain story for us.
And you know what it is.
Yeah.
And actually, let's start with the Wall Street Journal, sworn enemy of Google.
That true.
Who wrote an article that really misstated the case. Google exposed user data, feared repercussions of disclosing to the public. They opted not to disclose to its users its discovery of a bug that gave outside developers access to private data. It found no evidence of misuse. The story is that last spring, Google discovered that the Google Plus API could be misused to read everything in your profile, including the things that you marked private. So I immediately went to my Google Plus profile, and there's no credit cards numbers in there. It doesn't have your other Google data in there. It's your name, address, jobs you worked at. There were only two things I had marked private in that one. One was my personal email address, and one was my personal phone number. And if somebody got that, I don't think it's the end of the world. How about you? Do you have anything in there, Jeff?
I make nothing private.
You know? Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's where all those spam calls are coming from.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Google did know about it back in the spring and fixed the bug. Actually, we should now go to the Google Project Strobe post. Fixed the bug. Didn't tell anybody about it because, to the best of their knowledge, which is imperfect because they've been deleting logs every 2 weeks, it was never used. No information was exfiltrated. And since it had been fixed, they didn't feel like there was anything to say about it.
And said that a bit indelicately, like, kind of, oh, we don't need to bother.
Yeah. Then they said something which really surprised me. So as a result, we're closing Google Plus. Which, finding number one of Project Strobe, which, by the way, Project Strobe's interesting. It's a what they call a root and branch review of third-party developer access to Google account and Android device data. End of our philosophy around app data access. So that was the problem. Finding one, there are significant challenges in creating and maintaining a successful Google Plus product. that meets consumers' expectations. So action one, we're shutting down Google Plus.
I had this vision that Sundar said, is that still alive?
What, we are doing that? Yeah, he thought that Gundrucha, Vic took it with him. didn't Vic take that with him? So they're not shutting it down until August of next year. Next year.
Oh, wow. August, so I went ahead and download. I went ahead and did the export of all my data.
I have to be honest. Every time I go Google Plus, there's so much porno on it that I kind of stopped.
Stuff that I wrote.
No. Trey Ratcliffe wrote a farewell. So did Lauren Weinstein.
Who was a genius at Google Plus.
They were the last
ones left there.
But even on Lauren Weinstein's post about his farewell to Google Plus, the first comment was sex, 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 and a link to a sex site. Yeah. It's like it was. It's obviously
somebody rubbed my nose properly in a post when I said some time ago on Twitter, "No New York Times, it's not a ghost town. Do I look like a ghost? I'm there." Well, so much for that.
Why are they advertising so much porn if no one's there?
Good point. Good question. Spammers do it because it's easy and cheap.
It's free.
Yeah.
Oh,
but the spam is
it's gotten out of hand
over
there.
Great defender of Google Plus.
That's a good question. I don't know what Mike said. Trey Ratcliffe wrote an because I think actually, if anyone was the number one recipient of benefit from Google Plus, Trey made his career based on Google Plus.
He made the service too,
and he made the service. He's a great photographer. He was the number one followed photographer on Google Plus with 8.5 million followers. He wrote a post on Monday. What I would have done if I were designing Google Plus, which I didn't read because who cares? But I've heard a lot of people, including Mike Elgin, and I think you, Jeff, talk about what Google Plus should have done. Mm-hmm. They didn't do any of it. Trey was a huge fan of Google Plus. He thinks that sharing photos could have been the saving grace of Google Plus,
like Flickr.
Yeah, like Flickr. That did so well for Yahoo.
So, Mike, I have a few from his page. One is social networking is dead. It's dead, I tell you, poor Mike. He loves Google Plus. The best thing about Google Plus has always been its ability to attract great users. Right from the start, the unlimited post size, user moderation policy, and comment centrism favored substantive posting and commenting and the people who want to have real conversations. But I'm losing Google Plus. But I don't want to lose you, says Mike, and says where to find them.
And that's what everybody's doing.
And then another post.
They call them the pluspera.
Google is the new Yahoo. Mike argues Google is the new Yahoo.
That I might agree with.
Remember Yahoo? Yeah. 20 years ago, Yahoo.com got more traffic than any site on the internet, but it failed to evolve. In place of evolution or innovation, Yahoo simply started buying everything with the intention of integrating it. But it was unable to integrate anything in a compelling way. I get the anger, and I share Mike's angst, but I'm not sure that's true.
I follow a ton of photography sites, as you can see. So my Google Plus looks very different from your Google Plus, but it's a great place to put pictures, as you can see, high quality pictures. And so it's kind of a shame. A lot of this stuff, this is actually tame spam, but a lot of this stuff is spam. But a lot of the comments were spam, and in order to keep the comment spam out, and this is what Mike really wishes Google had done. You have to go through your comments and carefully prune it all out. And he says they should have followed the Twitter model. Sorry, it's hard not to laugh. it's sad. But that's the Google.
Do we have taps? Can we play taps for Google Plus?
That's the change log right there. No more Google Plus. Actually, there's a few. We've really been doing the changelog with all of the Google announcements, but there are a few other things. Google has done
You want the intro?
The Google changelog.
I didn't know you had it in your pocket. Thank you, Kevin. Jeff. It's Google Photos is doing an update, considerable update to Google Photos, including, and I guess this is ties to the new phones. They talked about some of this at the event. So you'll be able to, for instance, adjust the depth just like you do on a Pixel 3. You'll be able to do that on Google Photos as well. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. The top shot feature is coming to Google Photos. If you post a motion photo, you'll be able to do that as well. And I think there's a new checkbox, which I don't see here in this article, there's a new checkbox in Google Photos that has to do with sharing, and I'm trying to remember the details on that. See if I can find it. No, I don't see it here. What else? Making your connected home even smarter with Google Home and Nest. I guess that's the home hub. So is this, does it have Zigbee or Z-Wave or anything like that in the in this home hub?
Nope. Nope, just Bluetooth 5.0 and Wi-Fi.
Does it have Weave and Thread?
It does not have Thread.
Well, that's odd, because isn't that a Google thing?
Well, it was, and then, well, it was a Tony Fadell Google thing, so they developed it under that. And my hunch is they're like, oh, that's a little weird. Let's just screw that over. No more. And Google even runs its own Thread-ready version of Thread. It's not the official Thread.
Really?
So, yeah, because they invented it and used it ahead of time and put all these radios and software into their gear. And then the stand, like way before the standard came out. So when the standard came out, they were like, we'll adapt it. And the standards people were like, yeah, okay, you're Google. We would still love to have you be, you know, work with our stuff. So that's how that rolled. And now they're like abandoning it.
The new home app. I'm sure you're excited about that. More control at your fingertips, an updated home app, all devices in one view, quick
it's
actions.
Really pretty. Yeah. And as part of this, Google, they have these lights, the GE lights that are tied into the Google hub. And that's apparently, you can just plug those lights in or screw them in and they will connect automatically to the hub. So that's doing something that both
Hallelujah.
HomeKit and Amazon have done in the past or recently, fairly recently, on making it easier to connect stuff. So, yay!
And it can tell you if your lights are on, right? If you left some stuff, some things, if they're still on. Like it can warn you. You can get a notification. Oh. You left the living room lights on. That kind of thing.
Oh, is that happening? Kevin, did you see that?
I didn't see that. Are you sure that's not the hunches with
That sounds like Amazon hunches. But
oh, maybe that's Amazon. All right. I get them all confused.
Amazon did change their Madam A app, so that also happened. Everybody's moving, like, in lockstep. Oh, I'm going to tell you about an exclusive I had because it relates actually to Google. Ta-da! This was last week, so I'm just going to share it. Google, or Walmart, is actually saying to smart home device makers that want to sell stuff in Walmart that they need to support Google Home, or they shouldn't be, they won't be listed in the store. So you can't just have Alexa, you have to have Google Home as well. And they also, if you do support Alexa, you should put that on the back of the box or the side of the box. It should not be the most prominent part of the box. So those are two things that I had heard from many, 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 many people. I called, they were all anonymous, Jeff. So sorry. Nobody wants to go up against Walmart. That was six companies told me that. And then a couple of them actually said that Walmart was encouraging them to get off AWS. So it sounds like,
why,
you know, Walmart's
pushing
them
to get off AWS. What does that matter to
because
them?
They've actually in the past, like last year, they encouraged a lot of their tech vendors to get off of Amazon Web Services.
Just because, but isn't that a little, I want to say anti-competitive. Yeah.
It's not, I mean, it's, They asked people to. They did not demand.
Just like Microsoft asked you to. Yeah.
But I mean, it's
it would
is
be
it the
nice
same thing?
If you
wouldn't want to happen to your nice contract.
You can I can see a reason, like especially if you wanted somebody. I mean, you could encourage people to have infrastructure in both spots too. That would be kind of more resilient anyway, even though it's harder as an architectural decision and more expensive. So I don't know.
I remember the one thing, and this really comes from the new Google Home Hub. Live albums have been added to Google Photos, and that means you can check a box next to any album and it will automatically be updated. And the whole idea is that then if you're sharing to family and friends on their Home Hub,
device,
they'll get it always up to date.
That works with people or pets. So like when I actually have shared photo albums. Norm has a following apparently, and when I add photos or take photos of Norm, those photos will automatically be added to the Google Home Hub Live album. So they're kind of using like their search algorithm stuff and computer vision to just update your photos on the Home Hub on the fly.
So you choose the people and the pets you want to keep track of. Photos will automatically add photos of them to your album as you take them. And by the way, the album doesn't require you to be shared to a Google Home Hub. I could share it to anybody who has Google Photos, and that album would be updated there as well. Live albums now rolling out in a number of countries on Android, iOS, and the web. And that is the Google Changelog. It was a big week for the Changelog, if you include all the announcements. A lot of new products coming out. Let's see. Have we covered everything? I'm going to go back now. We've been jumping all over the place.
No, we haven't, actually.
Jumping all over the place. Amazon's eliminating monthly bonuses and stock awards for warehouse workers after raising wages to $15 an hour. Amazon giveth, Amazon taketh away. Oh, I love the AI recruiting tool that Amazon was using that had a little bit of a bias against women.
Jesus, guys, will you think for one second?
They've stopped using it. Amazon says they were really hoping to... This is the holy grail, this is according to Reuters. Everyone wanted this holy grail. They literally wanted it to be an engine where I'm going to give you 100 resumes, it spits out the top five, and we'll hire those. By 2015, the company realized its new system was not rating candidates for software developer jobs and other technical posts in a gender-neutral way. And this is something we've seen time and time again. When you train these models, you're training with the biases that the material that you're training them with has. And, of course, they're using resumes that were submitted to the company over a 10-year period, and most of them came from men. So as a result, and this is, you know, this is not a surprise, Amazon system taught itself that male candidates were preferable.
It's just like people today.
Just like real people. AI. Just like real people. It penalized resumes that included the word women's in them, as in women's chess club captain. It downgraded graduates of two all-women colleges.
Jeez.
Amazon edited the programs to make them neutral to those terms, but they finally disbanded the team and stopped using it because...
I'm not an expert at any of this, but it seems that you've just got to do a test of seeing what the outcomes are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, but you might even be blind to that. You might
That's
say,
the problem. You share those biases.
But so it's a number.
But you could say, well, the reason it's not giving us an equal representation of women is because there just that aren't that many applying.
Yeah. Just like I say that's, in life, yeah. But that's
right.
Not true.
That's, I mean... I know.
Your result may end up being, well, we prefer Ivy League schools, for instance. But what you might not see is the underlying fact that that then prefers men.
But what I'm saying
and then
is,
what you might. But you're right. If you looked at the raw number,
or you build in a desired result, yes. Which is no matter what the data show, give me a preponderance of good women candidates. Give me a preponderance of people of color. Give me a preponderance of this or that. That's
called
a goal.
Affirmative action.
Yeah. And there's no law involved here. It's the app, and you can build that into
you
the
goals. You can build
of the
affirmative
app.
Action into it. Yeah. Amazon scrapped it instead.
I wonder if you could make, and this is interesting because, you know, if we're thinking about doing AI in so many more avenues of life, what if we just become more astute about the key metrics that matter, right? So your college doesn't really matter. And that becomes kind of like letting people, like, remember when orchestras let people audition behind a curtain? So it could become kind of a curtain. So maybe you do the tech classes or the tech languages you need. And I don't know if that's possible. I'm just trying to think of ways.
No, I think that that's more sophisticated. The problem is what they're doing is dumping, they're doing machine learning and they're just dumping crap in there. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. The smarter, the better way to do it may not look as artificial intelligence-y, but that's to think a little bit more about the data.
It would be cleaning up the data more before running it through the model.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
And you're also looking at the outcomes. You want to test the outcomes against certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a product you might be able to buy in a year or so. Andy Rubin, as you know, was the creator of Android, went to Google, ran Android for Google for many years, then left to start a company called Essential. Essential's first phone was a flop, unfortunately. They said they were going to build a home automation hub. They've decided to stop work on that. and a second phone and focus on a phone that I don't know when they're going to come out with it, but it is a tiny phone, has a small screen, and requires users to interact mainly with voice commands. The phone would respond to text messages automatically.
Doesn't Google kind of already do that?
Well, maybe. The idea is for the product to book appointments or respond to emails and text messages on its own.
Oh, right. Oh,
that. Users would also be able to make phone calls from the planned device.
So a portable assistant maybe that you wear?
Yeah, maybe it isn't a phone.
Maybe it's not. Yeah, that's interesting. Because what's the Sam Lessons?
Viv.
Viv, I think, yeah.
Viv? No, that was the one that Samsung bought. Sam's is, his is humans, though.
Is it?
Mostly.
Oh, really?
That's why it's so expensive.
Oh.
it's pretty pricey. Yeah, I used it for a little while, and I didn't use it enough to justify it, but it's basically human assistance doing the work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Essential raised $300 million because of Andy Rubin's name.
Yeah.
So they have, I guess they have some left over. So they're going to work on this thing.
It's just like how Ev Williams was going to do the podcast service and ended up abandoning that for Twitter.
Yeah, could be. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
They put the home speaker project on hold. According to Mark Gurman, who had this story in Bloomberg Technology, they've already lost key engineers working on the project amid disagreements over the prospects for launching such an ambitious device. So back to the drawing board.
I wonder if this is a pivot on the Ambient OS, which is what Ruby was Andy was touting. That was going to be his smart home platform, or he's
maybe it's
got
just
something
a different
completely
form,
different.
Maybe that's what you mean. Maybe that's exactly right. It's just a different form factor. For according to Gurman and a person familiar with the development of this phone, a first prototype should be finished by the end of the year. And the person said the company might show off the device to industry partners as soon as January at CES. Well, that'd be interesting. I'd be interested in such a thing, wouldn't you? I mean,
yeah.
What is this device? It's not a phone so much anymore.
No.
I think the big screen, and the trend is towards bigger screens because you're doing things that are screeny on it. But what if you had a separate device that wasn't screeny? What if it was just handling communications tasks?
And like if we made a movie about it called Her.
And if you fell in love with it, and then it ran off to join the other AIs, and you were stuck with your high water pants and your bad mustache. What about that? Jeff's looking at us funny. You must have missed that movie.
It's on Netflix now.
It's an awesome movie.
Go see it.
It's depressing.
Her. Right, okay. No.
It's a little depressing.
Yes, it is.
Isn't it? I think, Stacey, you were the one who was told me it was depressing.
I think it's just depressing because everyone's so lonely.
Yeah. I think it's depressing because they all wear their pants up here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is also I'm not going to lie.
Is that the future? Did you see there was one guy from the future during the Google event? Do we have? I don't know if we have a video of that.
Shiggy? Was Shiggy there?
This is the new Shiggy. This is Google's Shiggy.
I want to be the new Shiggy.
Shingy.
Shingy. I want to be that.
All right. Let me see if I can find the Made with Google.
Is this the playground thing they showed?
No. Let me see if I can find the video. I'm going to have to really run through this fast to find him because he only was a... It was nice. They brought a lot of different people up on stage. Sundar was not there at any point, right? No, this is just their promotional video.
Was it a presenter or was it?
It was a presenter. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought it up. Now I'm just embarrassed.
Now we're all curious.
Now I'm just embarrassed. It was a guy who was wearing a suit that looked like it was made out of the same material, the same fabric. But it had, and he had a vest that had a very short little window. And then the suit was charcoal pepper, salt and pepper, and his hair was.
Is it Mark Spates?
It was Mark.
Was he presenting?
It was Mark Spates. I think it was.
Mark Spates is the best dressed man in the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm. Oh my!
That's
Demi with faint praise. I suspect
it was Mark Spates. No. You're right.
No, she's correct.
I'm serious.
So he's known for being kind of a fashion plate.
Oh yeah, he is a fashionista. Oh, yeah. I love him.
Well, he turns and you can see his vest because it was not a normal vest.
It is not. No, he doesn't. He's got a style, man. I love
him. He must have. Yeah. He's the head of Connected. He was the head of Connected Home Platform at Logitech. And yeah, he's now product leader at Smart Speakers at Google.
I like
him. He's one of the smartest people out there.
Oh, yeah. I liked him. But I just thought, if you were going to make a movie about the future, that's how people would dress, for sure.
I wondered when you started talking, when I was like, and when you mentioned the charcoal gray, I was like, oh, I've seen this suit. I know exactly what this is.
It's a nice suit.
Yeah. I think best.
Is he wearing his red shoes?
Actually, you're the one who tweeted the best dressed person in IoT. Yes. Here's your tweet. He retweeted you. Well, there you go.
Yep. I forget what color shoes he had, Stacey, but they were very fashionable, yes.
They're light and no socks.
And in the future, no one wore socks because that's superfluous. I just like a necktie.
If you're going to wear your pants that high, ankle-cut pants, no socks. Because
I want that suit.
Yeah.
That is a really hot suit. You don't think I'd look good in it?
I'm afraid we're.
You think he and Vince Cerf go shopping for vests?
I'd look like.
Who else does?
Yeah.
I bought a Bavarian vest in
Munich. I love vests.
It goes all the way up.
I want vests to come back.
Yeah.
I have a vested interest in vests.
That was below you.
This 20-year-old is, according to Motherboard, archiving thousands of flash banner ads from the early 2000s.
This triggered me.
So you can relive the old days of online casinos and lower my bills ads. He's got 4 gigabytes of them so far.
Slap the monkey.
Oh, yeah. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Now play.
These are hideous.
These are so bad.
Oh, they were hideous.
I gotta find.
Guys, I have to run in like 20 minutes.
Do you have to get? Oh, we're done. I'm just filling right now. I want to make you anxious.
I'm not anxious. I'm giving myself time, but I'm just letting you know.
One of the problems this kid's gonna have is that in a couple of years, Adobe says there won't be any more Flash, so he's gonna have to figure out a way to play these back. Yeah. Tyler Grant. He has archived over 66,000 banner ads from the early 2000s.
Wow.
Where's the site? I gotta go to the site now. I wanna check that out. I hate articles that don't
link to the stuff. I know it's wrong. Mm-hmm.
I hate articles without datelines. All articles should have a dateline.
All articles. Yep. Yeah.
Not a dateline. I'm sorry. A date.
Grant has a paste bin page. What?
Of the Internet Archive. So he pulls them off the archive.
I was wondering where he was.
Unfortunately, I don't think I have Flash on my computer.
No, fortunately, you don't.
Oh, that's right. Fortunately, I don't have Flash on my computer. Netflix is actually buying a studio in Albuquerque with 9 sound stages.
I can't imagine the stars. Albuquerque is a lovely city. I love it, but I can't imagine the stars want to go there.
They've already been producing stuff there.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad was in Albuquerque.
Well, but the story was too.
Yeah.
There's studios all over the country in weird places, believe it or not.
A lot of it to avoid the Los Angeles unions.
Yeah.
Nobody, for instance, wants, I've heard from many actors and others, wants to go to Vancouver again. But everything is shot in Vancouver because they don't have the same
unions. But Vancouver's so nice.
I love Vancouver. Yeah. I was, you know.
Like Albuquerque. Ugh.
So the company's called ABQ. It will create 1,000 new jobs and $1 billion in the Albuquerque economy. They shot The Avengers there and Sicario. Hmm. So a couple of movies have already been shot there. Netflix is deciding to do their own thing, make their own. And they like New Mexico. It's dry. It's a dry heat.
It is. A little cool here today. I always thought it was always hot.
Yeah, no, we're having winter is coming.
Oh, is that what you call it?
Yeah. Actually, speaking of archivists, and I'm trying to get this guy, we'd love to get this guy on the show. Mark Graham is the guy who runs the Wayback Machine. He did a podcast in which he revealed some interesting information about, this was at the ONA conference.
I know him. He's Mark
Graham?
Guy.
Yeah.
Good guy.
He was a speaker.
He did a whole bunch of archiving of television news.
Ah. He said, let me see if I can find the numbers. 1.6 million news programs.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Wow. They've got 200,000 78s recently donated by the Boston Library, an extensive video game collection. The Internet Archive adds 4 petabytes of information a year, 4 million gigabytes a year. Their total Wayback Machine content is 22 petabytes.
Where do they get the money to do this?
Brewster Kahle funded it initially, and I think they get people to help them out.
It's amazing, because I never hear the begging, but it's a really valuable
service.
Maybe all those flash ads are actually ads on there.
The mission statement, Internet Archive has been around for 22 years. The mission statement is simple, universal access to all knowledge. The problem, of course, was that the Internet, as great as it was, is disappearing, right? Yep. As flash ads disappear and so forth. So Graham says, we try to get everything, but it's challenging. Embeds, JavaScripts, interactive apps. We can't get some of this stuff, but we're working on it. You can boot an old version of Mac OS, a System 7 on it. You can run the HyperCard on it. Mm. It's really important. Really important.
OS 2 warp.
Yeah. He says, I love Google, but their job isn't to make copies of the homepage every 10 minutes. Ours is.
I hit used bookstores everywhere I go now because I'm doing
trying
research.
To save them.
And so down in Menlo Park, there's a used bookstore there, and I got a book that was all about bookshelves.
Not only are the books disappearing, but the shelves.
Well, the shelves are, yeah. Yes.
I love books and bookshelves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ever wanted was a book.
Big deal.
Library.
A lot of the original libraries had chained books.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
You're not that old. It was like the 1400s, 1500s.
Well, I went to Yale and at the Beinecke Rare Book Library, where they do have, in fact, a Gutenberg Bible.
Yeah.
They also have a map of Finland that was used to demonstrate that the Vikings came to America before Columbus did. And here we are in Columbus Day week, or Indigenous Peoples Day, as it's widely referred to now. This map is now finally being analyzed because it really is just a hoax. Some undergraduate tore a page out of a manuscript and drew this map. But nobody's ever admitted to it. And it's always been one of the jewels of the Beinecke collection. It's finally getting it's the same people who analyzed the Shroud of Turin are finally going to take a look at the Vinland map, claimed to be a 15th century map of the world. Okay, that is not my pick of the week. Could have been, but I think it's time for our picks of the week. And since Jeff is in studio, I think we should let him do his number first.
Okay, let me see which one I wanted to use.
Pick a number, any number.
So there is an underground food economy on Facebook.
What? Man, I want to join Facebook now.
Yeah. You can buy roti there. No.
Can you buy stuff?
So you can buy foods. These are things that are, it's not, the health department would go after you. You're not supposed to do this, but grandma is selling her brownies.
This is becoming a real problem because a lot of people are starting to cook in their kitchens and sell this stuff via these various delivery services.
Right.
And it's not regulated by the health department or anything, but it's grandma.
Yeah.
She wouldn't poison you.
So I liked that one. I thought that was an interesting one.
Do you want to give us the address if people still use
Facebook?
It's Facebook.
It's just you go, just various go to people are selling various things locally on Facebook.
You haven't done a disclaimer all show.
Oh, Facebook, yes. So I raised money for the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism from Facebook. I have no official ties to Facebook. I received no money from Facebook personally, and I'm independent of Facebook. End of disclosure.
Kevin Toefel, do you have a pick for us?
I do. I'm actually excited. I have not used this yet, but I have just received the Anki Vector robot.
Ooh, the new one.
So
the
cute.
New one.
So cute.
Yeah. This has all of its smarts on board. There's a Qualcomm 200 level chip in there and Wi-Fi. So it's got computer vision. It can recognize your face. It can speak. They are adding, I just found out today, they're working on their Alexa integration, which I'm surprised they're doing that because they weren't going to do that. But I got this because it's cute. It's fun. It's autonomous. So you set it up with a phone app, and then it just does its thing and reacts to you by voice, just like my Echo is right now. And there's what it looks like. Pixar people helped develop the facial features and the little animations. It's got personality. See, he's shaking around his head and whatnot. So
they say that,
that is
the robot's smart enough to take over the world, but too nice to.
Yeah,
that's a good slogan.
Yeah, the other reason I got this, and I got it on Kickstarter, even though Anki didn't need to do that because they're an established company. It was $199 on Kickstarter, and it's $249 in stores.
I want this
robot. Yeah, it's small. I mean, obviously it's very small.
It's the Cosmo. It's a darker, smarter version of the Cosmo.
Correct.
Where do I get the baby drone?
Yeah, it's not that robot. I love that one.
Or the Boston Dynamics dog.
Yeah.
So this is their ad has all these robots that you maybe don't want in the house.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
He'll even go back in his charging cable and all that. So the other reason, Leo, that I got this was because the SDK is coming out in December and it's all Python-based.
Yay, Python!
Yes, yes. So I'm excited for that. And then if you guys can share the photo that I have on there, this is my bonus Pixel 3 XL portrait mode.
Wow, is that good? Look at
But that is using the new ColourPop that they have that works with portrait mode. So that's why you see the gold on the robot and everything else is kind of grayish, grayscale.
Huh. That was automatic?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, the ColourPop picks something to make color, the foreground, and then everything else is black and white in the background.
Well, that Kevin, that was automatic?
Yep.
It's actually a filter, but what you do is you then tap on the screen and pick what you want, which color you want to pop. So I could have changed that to have the white box be a color, because I guess white's a color, really absence. So, yeah, so it's a very cool feature.
I'm getting it just for the camera, and I'm going to do this right. I'm going to say this right now. I did an experiment last trip. I only brought one camera and one lens, and it was a manual focus lens. This next trip, I'm only going to bring a Pixel 3.
Where's the next trip, by the way?
Instead of all the fancy camera gear that I've spent so much money.
Mm-hmm. Where are you going?
When is the next trip?
Hawaii in the spring.
Oh, my. Yeah.
But I don't know where or anything else because Lisa's surprising me. She says, I'll tell you when you get on the plane.
Oh. So, Kevin, before you were off you, the last question I have to ask you as the expert is, all right, so if I had $1,000 burning the hole in the pocket, which do I buy? The phone or the slate?
Oh, that's a good question.
Would you keep your Pixel book in either way?
I keep
case?
Everything.
What phone are you using now? Pixel 2?
2 XL.
Oh, so you have the most recent of. You're only a year old in either one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know. Maybe I'm biased, Jeff. I probably would go for the slate because I just would. I mean, you're getting a full Pixel book experience, but it's lighter, more mobile.
And you are Dr. Chromebook.
Yeah, but.
And I'm Chromebook guy too. Yeah, I think that maybe
it's not going to fix any problems that you have with the Pixel book, so to speak. But I think
hope Carson's going to do that soon. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Pixel 2 to the 3, sure, it's nice, but is it $1,000 nice? I don't know. I guess you could say the same with the slate. So,
Dr. Tofel,
you'll be sorry when you see my pictures from Hawaii.
Jeff, you could buy the Rotimatic.
Wait, there's a third choice. What's behind door number three? It's the Rotimatic. Make your own bread, naan, and pizzas with a Rotimatic.
A 3D roti printer. How
it even counts your roties.
It even counts your roties. And now, Stacey Higginbotham and her pick of the week.
Okay. Oh, man. You guys, I'm going to stop traveling for a while, so it's very exciting. But until I get to my home, I'm back in App Land. I actually have two things. I'll give you two things. One that is kind of like fun. I saw this at the Smart Kitchen Summit. It is a app. It's only on iOS right now. It's called Suggestic, Suggestic. And what it does is it helps you, pick a nutrition plan like vegan or vegetarian, or in my case, I've got someone in my family with the low FODMAP diet, which is freaking esoteric, or Whole30. You tell it that, and then it gives you recipes that meet that need, but also if you're near restaurants that have things you can eat, it will pop up when you're at a restaurant and tell you what you can eat in those places. So some of it is paid, some of it is free. Some of the design, like some of the food preferences you might have to pay for, but you should check it out, see if you can use the free site, and if you like it, you know, level up to the paid. But I thought, because I have people in my life that are on freaky diets, this was actually kind of a really neat service.
Yeah.
So.
Suggestic. Suggestic.com. So what's the diet? FOD?
Oh, FODMAPs.
FODMAPs.
Just don't even.
Don't even get started.
Don't even.
All right.
So, oh, and here's my other thing, because I just watched it, because again, traveling all the time. This is so old. It's from 2009. But if you have Stars, Party Down is an amazing two-season show. That is all.
I never heard of it.
It is hilarious, and I cannot believe I hadn't seen it.
A group of actors move to Los Angeles to make it big, but end up working as caterers.
Just trust me on this one. It is like Arrested Development funny.
Oh, it is. It's got the Good Place girl.
Yes, it does.
Kristen
it
had,
and it has the dude
Bell.
From.
I love her.
Will from Silicon Valley. It has Jane Lynch in it.
Jane Lynch is in it.
Wow.
Jane Lynch is in it. And yeah,
I want it.
I'd never heard of it. I was like, let me check this out. Done. It's awesome.
Is it okay? Paul Rudd created it.
It is not for children.
Not for children, because they're partying down. Wow. Lizzie Kaplan's in it. I love her.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Seriously.
Megan Mullally's in it. I love her.
Yeah.
What a good cast.
So.
Okay. 20 episodes. Enjoy them all. Courtesy.
Party down.
Party down. Ed Begley Jr. is in one episode.
Oh, yeah. The cameos are worth it.
Steve Guttenberg's in one episode.
That was a really good episode.
Do you like Marvel's Mrs. Maisel?
Oh, I love that show.
I didn't really get into it. I got more angry at it. Because I'm like, stupid sexist, everybody, grr.
Yeah, yes, but she triumphs.
She triumphs, yeah.
I get it, but I'm sick of like that
narrative.
Yeah, I get it.
You know what I thought was the reason to watch it is the woman who plays...
Oh, she's great.
What's her name? Is it Rachel Brosnahan? I can't remember her name.
Yes, she is really good.
Like, she is a revelation. I think she's going to be a huge star.
Yeah.
She's just charismatic and good, and it's really – that's the best part of it.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the reason that show's a success.
Yes, it is.
That and the period
piece
of it, this of it. I like old New York stuff.
Yeah.
New York in the 50s. Well, did you say you have two? Did you want to do something besides – oh, you did. Party Down and Suggesting.
Yeah, because a pick from 2009 feels a little cheap.
Get on that airplane, Stacey.
What time is your flight?
It's like 4:15 or 4:30.
Oh, yeah, I'd be at the gate. I'd already be standing in line by now.
Get to the gate.
I'm too neurotic.
Get out of that lounge. Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IoT.com. At Giga Stacey. See ya. She does the IoT podcast with this cat right here, Kevin Toefel, also a former Giga Omer.
But now Dr. Chromebook, and many other titles.
Dr. Chromebook, I like it.
I got my honorary doctorate. Wow, look at that.
About Chromebooks.com, at Kevin C. Toefel. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
Jeff Jarvis is the Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. He's also director of the Tau Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at City University of New York.
And, as I say on my resume, a co-host of This Week in Google.
Nice. It's a resume builder. BuzzMachine.com, at Jeff Jarvis. Thank you for coming and being
in studio. I'm so happy to be here.
I know.
It was worth the fright of coming over a bridge.
Well, you made it.
Yeah, I did.
And he brought some friends with you.
Yeah, I did.
Who you can't talk about. Did they work for Super Micro? Anyway, it was very nice to see you again.
It was great to see you, boss.
Yeah, I'm sorry we steered you wrong on the Mexican restaurant.
It was okay. It was all right. It was all right.
It's the best we had to offer. Sorry.
Here are the chicken capital of the world.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we do This Week in Google at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC every Wednesday. If you can stop by and say hi, we'd love it. There's a couple of ways you can watch. Of course, you can always be in studio. We'd had a nice studio audience today, thanks to Jeff and some people who stuck around, and Andre, who was visiting from Spain. Usually, you bring a bunch of Google developers. You come here a lot. He's often here for Google I/O. Oh, you were here for the Made by Google event. Yeah, but that was in New York, so never mind. We're going to give Jeff the honorary baseball cap. Andrea, nice to have you. If you want to be here in studio, there you go. Looks good. Black on black.
Technology great again.
I love it. That's a good looking hat.
It is. I wear it with pride.
I didn't even know we had such a thing. That's nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
They're in the Twit
store.
Which is twit.tv/store.
Like sorry.
If you want to look as good as Jeff, our model, our boy model for the show, go to twit.tv/store. If you want to be in studio, email tickets at twit.tv. We'd love to have you here. If you want to watch live, twit.tv/live. The chat room is irc.twit.tv. The show's available after the fact at twit.tv/twig or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. In fact, if you go to twit.tv/subscribe, we have lots of information there to help you subscribe. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week on Twig. Bye-bye.